up your weekend breakfast
with Refilwe Mbakanyane on 702.
Let's walk the talk.
We're walking the literature talk and the books talk right now with Karabo Kholeng. Good morning, Karabo.
Good morning, Refilwe.
So today you are taking a look at The Cursed Touch paperback by Rashida Khan. Tell us about it.
Well, it's a contemplative novel that looks at, it's more sort of themes-based than plot-based, but the plot is quite interesting because the novel begins when you meet this woman, Sandra, who is living her best life. You know, she's got a handsome husband, she makes lots of money in an investment firm, and she's got a lovely teenage son, but she's very disconnected from people, generally. And it works for her career because, you know, she works in a cutthroat sort of money-making space. So she has lots of affairs. And her husband, you know, her husband sort of pretends to look away, feeling that providing a stable home for the son is the best thing. And maybe, you know, eventually she'll stop with her shenanigans and, you know, start to appreciate her family. But she doesn't. And, you know, she uses her feminine wiles and her smarts to get ahead and to get big deals for the investment company that she works for. And she rises very quickly up the ranks to a position of immense power, where the only people that she reports to is like the head of HR and the two partners. And she's got her own kind of staff complement that works with her, and she's known as, you know, the ice queen. And she starts taking in interns, right, every year. And when you meet her in this novel, she starts an affair with this young intern by the name of John. And he's like considerably younger than her. And
can I stop you right there, Karabo?
Yes.
As we would say on the streets of the social meds, Afrikaans knife, or knife in Afrikaans. Mess.
Yes.
Mess. That's all that's coming to mind as you describe this character.
Well, it's hectic, hey? She falls in love. Well, John falls in love with her. She's just having an affair. She's using him because he's this hot young man. And again, it's power. So it's the thrill of power. And, you know, and power and lust are very sort of close together. The internship ends. John starts, you know, falling in love with her, buying her, like, presents. You can imagine him, this poor intern, buying, like, basically a millionaire.
Shame,
like, little silver necklaces, and shame. And he believes that this is the woman of his dreams, right? And he's totally idealized her. And the fact that he was able to have access to her body, as well as, like, you know, to taste her power, like, makes him feel really good. But she makes it very clear that, no, she's not interested, and she keeps insisting that I made it clear from the beginning that it's just sex, sort of fun, and we're keeping it discreet. And then when the internship ended, she was like, now you need to, like, never contact me again.
Sure.
Like, ever. John gets depressed, kills himself, right? His mom finds him hanging, like, off the balustrade at home, and she's devastated. Her mom's name is Hannah, and because she and John were very, very, very close. She, you know, she and her husband had married young, and they were, you know, a very compact, tidy, neat little family, you know, Christian, good values and all of that. And John had been the golden boy. You know, apart from the odd mood that was normal as a teenager, he was optimistic, you know, just everything that his mother instilled in him, you know, optimism and compassion and you know, and loving unconditionally and fiercely. And a few months after his internship ends, you know, he seems a little bit withdrawn, and then jiggy, he kills himself. So the company, they find out at the company that this happened. One of the former interns died by suicide. It's, you know, they send some flowers to the family, and they move on. Sandra doesn't care. She's just like, yo, dude should have just handled his life, you know. She doesn't feel at all responsible. Yeah, she's like, no, I've made it clear that it was just good times and he got a nice opportunity. He needs to move on with his life and get a girlfriend his age, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But now Hannah is devastated, and she just can't get past this. And a while after John dies, she decides to contact the company and speak to HR. And HR says, you know, we can't give information, but we'll ask some of the former interns who were interning with John if they can contact, you and, you know, share anything with you. So one of the interns, former interns, actually calls Hannah and says, look, your son is having an affair with the big boss lady and it ended badly.
Sure.
So maybe you should look into that.
So
Hannah does.
Yeah. No, carry on, Garaba.
So Hannah does, and she finds, don't worry, I'm not going to ruin the entire story, but Hannah eventually finds John's diary, and he'd been encouraged to keep the diary since he was young. It's good for you to keep a journal. And this journal just shows how obsessed John was with Sandra. Mm-hmm. And that she broke his heart, and he just could not imagine life without her.
Yeah.
He'd just rather be dead, so he killed him. So, you know, he dies by suicide. And Hannah then decides to confront Sandra, and that confrontation, Sandra's son and husband find out, and the workplace find out, and Sandra basically loses everything. Her family and her job is like hanging.
I thought you said you weren't going to spoil it all for us, Garabo.
It's not over. This is the beginning of the story.
So, I mean, you know, tell us about Rashida Khan's writing, and, you know, you've said it's less about the plot and more scenes and, you know, and just pictures and scenarios, but my goodness. So if that's not even the end and this is just the beginning of the story, how does she take you there? How does she carry you through this journey, Rashida Khan?
I mean, so that's the blurb. So the meat of the story, that the story actually really begins at that point where Sandra loses everything.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's a lot that happens, but the real story begins at, you know, how did, you know, the story is about how Sandra goes on to try and rebuild her life, and you'd find the backstory to why Sandra became the kind of person that she was, you know, and how Sandra and Hannah, you know, find a way to reconnect, because obviously, you know, Sandra having lost everything, she wants to apologize to everyone, but everyone's like, no, but you're ice cold, you know, because even when Hannah confronted her about, you know, her son dying by suicide and that their affair had a lot to do with it, she was like, no, he's an adult. You know, I'm not responsible for that. So you can imagine also the power dynamic there. And then issues of, you know, family secrets and loss, you know, especially, you know, childhood loss and losing your child as a mother. Whether it's because Hannah and Sandra, what they have in common is that they both lose their sons, right? Sandra, because the family wants nothing to do with her, because she'd been a distant mom, you know, the whole time. The dad was doing the nurturing, like the parenting work. Sandra was all about career and money and sex.
Yeah.
And Hannah lost her son to suicide. So, you know, and it's about dealing with that loss, you know, the loss of your child through tragic means, and then, you know, loss in childhood, because you find the backstory to, you know, that the losses that Sandra had, you know, she'd grown up in Durban. I'm not going to give that away, but it's very juicy because there's an interracial marriage involved and affairs and stuff like that, and illegitimate children, and I hate that word, but that's a language that was used in the past.
Right? Yes.
And Sandra being caught up in the mix, you know, also, you know, different religions, you know, in a couple of families that are tied together, and how Sandra develops this wall around her because of the hurts, and how that plays out in the choices that she makes, who she decides to become, or who she feels she needs to be in order to be strong and to protect herself and to not need anyone,
you know,
to be in control.
Mm-hmm. What I found interesting when you were giving us, telling us the blurb of the book and just describing the story itself is, you know, it seems as though Rashida has put in, and I don't want to say stereotypes, but, you know, all those typical tropes. She's successful, high-powered, cold, the ice queen, distant and not emotionally available at home to hubby and child. And how does that play out in how she writes? And, you know, do you, can we quickly be assured that this is not the case? This is a book that you can access and the character is relatable and or one that you can relate to on some level, if not necessarily like.
Yeah, look, I mean, I wouldn't, you know, that's the thing with stories like this, right? And I think the theme more is about kind of, the themes are more about like lessons you can learn from loss. and, you know, asking questions about, you know, is redemption possible? Because the way that the novel carries itself, basically, is Sandra contemplating and, you know, going back to her past and figuring out, you know, who she wants to be. And you know, trying to reach out to Hannah and to her husband, David, and son for forgiveness. And whether that is truly possible. And is she being genuine? You know, so, I mean, my criticism from that is that, you know, from sort of a character sort of production, because, you know, also Sandra sort of changes. But for me, it's too easy. Because if you've been a certain way for most of your life, even if the consequences of your behaviors are terrible, people don't really change. If they do, it is hard, long, hard work. And it's a little bit too simple in terms of how, you know, Sandra finds her redemption. But also, you know, there is a very sort of kind of semi-spiritual, kind of self-helpy kind of vibe to it. Mm. I could compare it to, although those characters are sometimes a little bit more complex, but I think when you get older, you realize that they're not. Paulo Coelho's, who wrote like The Alchemist and all of those books, you know, he sets you on this kind of story, but it's not about what happens in the story as much as it is about the lessons that you learn about spirituality, because there's a lot of spirituality in this, because Sandra does find her spirit, you know, does start to live a more spiritual life. And Hannah, as a result of the loss of her son, she turns away from God. Mm-hmm. And then it's also that thing between, you know, sort of Christianity and Islam, because of Sandra's identity, that sort of comes into play and looks at, you know, how do you live a spiritual life, you know, beyond religion. You know, yeah. So it's more about that. So, I mean, it is about a kind of spiritual search, because even the chapters, you know, have are titled in interesting ways that speak to kind of the lessons in, you know, in Sandra's sort of journey towards redemption and healing and changing, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, it begins with, you know, Sandra's a sexy woman and, you know, foolishness, you know, truth coming out. Death and destruction, anchorless and adrift, you know, relief and refreshment, you know, all of that. So it is a kind of sort of a semi-spiritual kind of book that's sort of
got it.
Sort of couched within like a kind of story and, you know, a fictional plot that brings in all the things that I suppose, you know, get people's attention. And those tropes exist because those kinds of personalities.
Because like life, because true.
In the real world. Yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, Karabo, a couple of weeks ago, you gave us a list of books that were a festive season reading list. How far on the list are we? And what's the next one that you're eyeing for an actual review?
Well, next week's review is definitely Angela Makolo's Critical But Stable. I'm really excited.
Yes, been looking forward to that.
Yeah, I think it'll be, the first Saturday of December. I think that's a good one to start with. And then I will go through the rest of the list. But Critical But Stable is definitely on the way. So is Paradise in Gaza by Nick Mtlongo. There's Talking to the Sun, Takalani M. There is also, I finally got a copy of Joburg Noir, but Lick Mtlongo edited.
Oh, lovely.
So
yeah.
I'm going to go into that. And Scatterlings by Rusokwetse Manenje. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
I've just finished Those Who Live in Cages, and I'm just kindly asking for a friend, exerting some editorial influence here, to say, please, please, can you talk about that soon? No pressure.
Okay, you know what? Okay, I'll give you those. Okay, here's the thing. I'll do those who live in cages next week, and then we'll do Angela the week after. Is that okay?
Winning! You've just made my entire year. Love the book. Absolutely loved it.
Yeah, no, it's an amazing book. And so we'll definitely have a conversation about that next week then, because... there's a lot going on there. I mean, I spoke to the publisher and I said, guys, this needs a play as well. Can you imagine that on stage?
It does. Absolutely does. A play and a six-part series as well. All right. We're manifesting a six-part series for Those Who Live in Cages. Karabo Kholeng, always a pleasure. We'll chat next week.
All right, Rufino, take it easy. Have a good one.
Will do, you too. And of course, if there's any title that you'd like Karabo to take a look at and review, spread the love. REFILOE, Rufilwe@702.co.za. Drop us an email.